Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMSD. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club. The BMC is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we've got almost 2,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, it's great to have you back again. Welcome. In this episode, I'll be speaking to marketing consultant Kate Denham about targeting. Plus, CEO and founder of Adapt2Me, Will Wright, gets marketing heard in the boardroom. Senior strategic marketer Alex Brayshaw talks about change in business marketing. And head of marketing at MediaHawk, Faye Thomason, looks at some great business marketing. Are you listening comfortably? Then we'll begin. If your value proposition isn't customer-centric, you're affecting your conversion rate immediately. So says marketing consultant Kate Denham, who joins me now. Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dave.
So before we get into the deep and murky world of customer centricity, perhaps you can tell us a bit about what you're working on right now.
Sure. So I've been freelancing for the last 5 months. Previously, I've spent 9 years at Really B2B and 4 years client side, marketing to businesses in manufacturing, engineering and facility sectors. So just drawing on my experience from both sides now to work with clients across a wide range of industries, B2B primarily, and some B2B to C as well.
So, that puts you in I think quite a privileged position on the kind of whole topic of customer centricity, and you've said that not being customer centric affects your conversion rate. So perhaps we should start by you educating me on what customer centricity is.
Certainly. So what I mean by customer centricity is making sure that your business is all about your customer and not just about your product or your service. I think a lot of businesses still now talk about themselves, whether that's what product or service it is that they offer, how long they've been doing it for, all that kind of information. Actually, what you need to get across to your prospects quickly is what is it that you're going to do for them.
Okay. So does that mean then when you kind of talk about the impact of not being focused on the customer on conversion rate, you've got some examples in mind, some practical examples of how that lack of customer centricity exactly affects conversion?
Sure. Well, if you take your website, for instance, if you manage to get your prospect to your website, you've got about 8 seconds to get their interest. So if you've managed to get them there, if you're not telling them exactly what it is that you can do to help resolve their problem or what it is that you're going to do for them quickly, you're probably going to lose their attention. And I think if you think about how many competitors you might have in that space, or even other solutions that come somewhere close, if those other businesses are managing to do that well, then you're probably going to lose that prospect to them at some point, whether that's on your website or throughout their journey to get that solution to their problem.
Okay, so you brought me in to this kind of customer centricity thing a bit. So how can I go about as a business marketer making my proposition more customer centric?
Sure, well, I think you've got to be able to understand your customer and perhaps multiple customers if there's a handful of segments that you might be targeting. So I would always start by understanding who are the good customers, so which are the profitable customers you you feel are a good fit for your business, your product or your service. Segment them as much as you possibly can. So by industry, by business size, and down to decision maker level as well. I think once you can understand the different types of businesses and the different people that you want to sell to within those businesses, you can then begin to understand them more. So I'd recommend, if you can, talk to those customers and understand the language that they use, understand what their day-to-day looks like, what their key challenges might be within their role. Talk to people in your sales department, your customer success department, anyone that's customer facing. So I think it's always quite difficult when you're in marketing, you tend not to be so customer facing. You're tucked away somewhere. So if you can talk to everyone in your team who does face your customers and try and build a profile for them as much as possible, then that's a great place to start.
And so let's make this practical then. Which businesses do this well?
I mean, HubSpot, again, they do this really well. I think it's kind of different if you're a marketer marketing to marketing people compared to if you're a marketer marketing to somebody more technical or in engineering, for instance. I think the job is always a lot harder for somebody who's trying to market to somebody in a completely different world.
Yeah.
So yeah, HubSpot for me is a fantastic example as a marketer. They are a company that I come across a lot because I'm searching for particular answers to questions that I have. And yeah, they're always there when I do online searches. I use their blogs to find out more and educate myself more. So yeah.
Okay. So for listeners thinking, hey, Kate might have a point here, this customer centricity thing is important after all, where do they get started?
I would start by profiling your customer data and discovering or trying to find out which customers are your most profitable, which ones do you want to create more of. Segment them down by industry size, sector, and down to the level of decision maker as well. If you don't have that information, you can often get this appended to your database. A lot of companies I know don't gather that kind of information. They're just going to have on their database what their customer has provided. Once you have that, then talking to your customers and understanding what kind of language they use, what their typical day looks like, what projects they work on, their challenges, is a good place to start. And you can create personas as well. So once you've kind of mapped, you've uncovered all this information, you can map that and document it and create personas so that you've always got a template really to go back to for all of your marketing materials, and making sure that every message that you create ties back to them.
Marketing consultant Kate Denham, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
A recent survey by Deloitte showed that just 5% of marketers had confidence in their ability to influence the overall direction of a business, a figure that is reflected, unfortunately, in the diminishing number of marketers that seem to have a seat at the boardroom table. So just what's gone wrong? I'm joined by Will Wright, the founder of Adapt2Me, to discuss marketing in the boardroom. Will, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
It's good to have you here. So before we dive into marketing at the board, perhaps you can tell us a bit about Adapt2Me.
So Adapt2Me is a next generation management, innovation and growth consulting company. It's a quite a mouthful, but we focus on systematic delivery of commercial and customer value, working with global corporates, progressive SMEs, PE and VC companies. We specialize in strategy, marketing, sales, and the supporting operations. So really the commercial operations is where our home is. We have a great team who support all that. My partner in crime, Geraint Holleman, all our associates and partners.
So that means I reckon you're in a really good place to tell us what marketing should be offering to the board.
I wouldn't presume to tell everybody what that is. I think we have a view. We definitely believe that there are a number of disciplines involved in marketing, and that every marketer should be able to explain exactly what they are. And that might not be everybody's perception of marketing, because our definition is certainly slightly bigger, more comprehensive. So could we tell the board what marketing is? I would put the question back to you and say, well, we've struggled for a long time with, well, what is marketing? And when we ask that question of almost anybody, they tend to give us either a different answer or struggle to define it. So we've tried to put a consistent definition, at least for us, around that, which is our kind of 42 disciplines, which is how we explain what it's all about.
And those 42 disciplines, are they, does each one of those disciplines, in your view, offer something that the board would see as a reason for marketing being at the top table?
Yes, in different degrees. The short answer is that the first two sets of disciplines really are to do with things like customer insight, understanding the marketplace, how you connect marketing with business strategy, operating model design, sort of value proposition development, positioning, brand building. So some of these things clearly marketers would recognize quite easily. All of them are strategic disciplines. They are as important as the business strategy itself. Then, of course, there's the execution disciplines, things like content marketing, communications, the connections into sales, account management, how you enable sales, and then all the performance disciplines after that, which are how you improve performance, how you build capability. So, and collectively, what they do is they allow you to develop a clearer picture of cash flow, revenue, etc. They also allow you to create a clearer picture, perhaps in some companies for the first time, of how to manage the capital asset of the company. So things like customer relationships and brand are hugely valuable capital assets, and all the componentry in the in what I'm talking about helps you manage that. That's of particular interest to the board, and that's important.
And how about if we were to turn that into numbers? Can we quantify the value of the marketing contribution at that level?
We get asked this question all the time. How do you quantify the value of marketing? And how do marketers quantify the value of what they do? And I think there's a lot of misconceptions around things like marketing ROI. There is no such thing as marketing ROI. It's a silly thing to try and go and measure. Marketing is a continuous process. It's a pipe through which everything flows. So it has no start and no end. Therefore, it's difficult to attach an ROI to it. But if we just put that to the side and think, well, what metrics does marketing commercial operations have control of that it could talk of at board level confidently? And there are many. So, things like market penetration, market share, brand recognition, brand value, opportunity cost, competitor win-loss ratios, cost of acquisition, retention, free cash flow. These are all things that the board would be more than happy to discuss. So the job of marketeers, and I have to say, good marketeers do this all the time, and there are many of them. It's just marketing's got a kind of bad rep for not being able to talk that language. It's not deserved, but it's the perception that's out there, and that's the problem. We need to learn to explain what we do, how we do, and the impact of what we do in those kinds of numbers. That gives us credibility, And from that point, we can help the board understand other aspects of marketing, why certain positionings are important, why brand has an effect in increasing margin, those kinds of things, which are all true. Again, there's absolutely heaps of scientific evidence for it, but we have to get into the kind of board vernacular.
And so you talked there about our kind of bad reputation. Is that why you would say marketers generally aren't sat at the board table?
Yeah, I think it is just, I don't know how it's grown up, but there's just a perception that marketing's not up to that. It's a bit more lightweight, doesn't want a heavyweight conversation. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that's true. I think good marketers have always known how to do this. They are as obsessed with the kinds of numbers the board's interested as anyone else on the board is. But it's kind of paradoxical that, you know, marketing is the discipline which is supposed to position things and sell and brand and all that kind of stuff. We're not doing a very good job of doing it ourselves. You know, our own profession is getting trashed from some quarters, and we need to fix that.
So how can we fix that? Given that you're saying that actually, well, there's a lot of marketers who just simply aren't behaving in this way. But clearly we need to do more than just behave in the way that you suggest in order to be able to change the reputation. So, you know, how can we get there?
I would selfishly say you start with revisiting what you think marketing is and define it and get it clear in your head what it is, so that whatever conversation you're going to have with the board, you're clear and concise. The second thing is, I think there needs to be more encouragement and training kind of in around helping marketers to embrace a wider perspective of marketing, to tell the story of things like the 42 disciplines, but not that. There are other ways to do it. I'm just saying that they've got to be both highly strategic and they need to be executioners of the plan at the same time. So strong emphasis on things like systematic performance improvement, accountability, you know, evidence-based things that the business plan and the board are interested in. I think the other thing I would, you know, suggest is start acting like a kind of T-shaped person. Start appreciating other perspectives. So, you know, finance is not the devil. The CFO is there to help you, but you need to speak his language. Tech's the same. You want to embrace these different disciplines and then introduce sort of marketing concepts to them. But I mean, you know, it's for me, it's kind of, well, evidence all the time, more evidence.
Do you think we can turn this around?
I do. I wouldn't have got into or built Adaptomy if I didn't think this could be turned around. I think there's a challenge there, but I think it can definitely be turned around. I think the other kind of footnote is, if we don't do something about this, then other disciplines, data sciences, strategy and whatnot, will eat our breakfast. And there's no need for that to happen. I think it can definitely be turned around. It's kind of, you know, I don't want to diminish the value of creativity. Creativity is a hugely important aspect of it's kind of like architecture. You can't have architecture without, you know, the creative as well as the mathematics. So the both sides of the coin are really important, but we kind of need to do more homework, more promotion of our skills on the math side of the equation. And I think if we do that, I don't see any reason why more marketers can't be on the board. I mean, quite frankly, if you look at some of the greatest marketers that did get to the board, they're just like that. They know the numbers. They're quite creative. They get the whole show. And many great companies have many great marketers on the board.
So there's hope for us all. Will Wright, founder of Adaptomy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession and political and social conflict dominating our lives. And that calls for us to do business marketing differently, both now and in the future. In our show and tell series, we're hearing from client side and agency side marketers in businesses from startup all the way up to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, in brand, in marketing strategy, in messages and channels. They'll be sharing experiences and offering advice. Today, it's the turn of strategic marketer and partner at the Magnus Club, Alex Brayshaw. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Good to see you again.
It's good to have you here. And over to you, sir.
Fantastic. Thank you. And hopefully I'm offering a bit of insight into what I think is happening in our B2B world. So today I wanted to talk about the way clients and agencies are going to be working together very, very differently now and in the future. So first things first, if anyone thinks that the current relationship between clients and agencies will remain the same, it's absolutely not. Traditional models of outsourcing much of the creative, strategic, media and production services and all of those things that go on, outsourcing them to external agencies is very much over. So what does that mean? There's a couple of models out there that range from everything being fully in-housed all the way to completely outsourcing all services. But I think the thing that stands out for me is the hybrid model, and that's the thing that is going to be most prevalent. And that's about having a mix of in-house resources, insourced resources, and outsourced specialist services that you buy on demand. Now, the changes I'm talking about, they've been happening for a couple of years. In fact, if you look at the sort of consumer world, it's probably been the last decade where you've seen some of those shifts to big chunks of services moved in-house. But it's actually been less prevalent in B2B. But I think the last year or so, it's been much accelerated. And we might say, has COVID had something to do with that? Maybe it's part of the mix, but I think it's just been a general shift. So if I think about what's driving that, I've talked to a number of brands and agencies over the last 6 months just to try and understand what all of that means and what's the likely impact. So what's the impact on those brands, those clients, and the impact on the agencies themselves. So if you think about what's driving it, I think it's easy to jump on, well, this must be a cost thing. It's all about cost saving. Well, I think there's some truth in that if you think about the pressures that budgets are coming under, and that's sort of getting more and more. And actually, if you start to look at that as an organization, go, well, what are the fees within an agency set up that are making up some of that budget? And as we're getting pressured on budget, are the fees becoming sort of too significant a part of it? And we actually want to kind of bring some of those areas in-house. And I think there is some drive to all that, but I think cost is too simple an answer, and there's too much kind of intricacy and complexity. And actually, it's quite difficult to compare the cost savings between the different models. Primarily, though, for me, I think it's about making marketing much more effective. And, you know, that means driving growth. It means about doing things better. And it's being effective by being closer to the rest of the organization. So, you know, if you can get those teams that are building the brand, creating campaigns, planning media, running the analytics, all of the other things, if you can get those closer to the people that are selling or the operational parts of the business, or even down to the R&D aspects of the business, then surely you have this really tight, aligned, effective marketing and sales organization. So if you get all of that under one roof, it sounds like nirvana. I don't think that's right. And I think there's sort of too many downsides to that, because if you're looking at building all of that in-house, you're starting from scratch. So you're trying to build skill sets and resources that you're not typically used to bringing into a corporate environment. And you also need people to run these teams who get how these teams run. Then you've got technology platforms and investment needed and technology platforms to introduce and train up on. So there's a big tech deployment too. So I think the notion of bringing everything in-house is probably too big an undertaking, and payback is too long-term. And I actually don't think it's feasible in most cases. A lot of the people I've spoken to have decided to take sort of it step by step, and they've only started to take certain parts in-house. yet they still have a strong group of specialist agencies to support them, albeit those specialist external agencies are a smaller number, quite well defined, and they're not your traditional full service or integrated agencies that do everything. They're quite specialist support. Some I've spoken to have started with just bringing in the creative or the brand creative in-house, or they brought in media buying and production, the execution. And to me, that makes a lot of sense, because if you can bring media production in-house and you connect it properly to all of your internal CRM, your marketing automation systems, you actually get over a lot of the hurdles that many external agencies have when they're trying to work truly end-to-end, and some of the barriers that get in the way of that. And if you can kind of make that bit work, you've got a pretty powerful and hopefully a very agile marketing machine. So of all of that, I think the hybrid model seems to be the best option. But in itself, there's kind of complexities within it, and it takes effort to set up and manage. I think for those people that are trying to build those in-house resources, I think getting support from agencies or agency people in developing that is key, because they can see some of the barriers, some of the challenges you might have, even if it's about buying media and some of the contractual agreements that need to be made between with publishers and things. So I think process, recruitment, defining roles and responsibilities are probably going to be the main areas to solve, and probably the main stumbling blocks that could cause failure. On the other side, I was talking to a number of tech companies recently, and they're big tech companies who've actually only been around 10 to 12 years. So, you know, people who've moved very quickly, grown very quickly, and interestingly have had in-house services built in right from the start. So it's totally in their DNA. And because of that, as you'd expect, the systems work. And really importantly, the culture works. Everyone else in the organization gets what that in-house or marketing organization does, or creative resources does. But interestingly, they're not opposed to additional support. So even though they've gone, we are about in-house, they actually still are looking for outside perspective. That's to try and get a broader view, to get best practice from people who are working with lots of other organizations. And I think specifically around strategic support. And that's where we really see a significant skills gap around strategy, because it's actually not always easy to find strategic people who are both commercial and creative. So the demand for that kind of in-source model works really well there. So kind of buying in that strategic support kind of fits really well. I guess for me, ultimately, these things are changing, okay? And there are advantages to all of it. And actually, there are many advantages to moving to a hybrid model, not just for clients, but for the agencies too, because you've got a lot better alignment between the organizations and the kind of understanding of what each other does. So for me, I would encourage clients to look at all of the models and options that are out there. Talk to other brands who've done it, who've struggled, who've found challenges, but have succeeded, and then work out the best fit for your business. A model that you think is going to get the best out of the people you need, whether that's your own people, whether it's people you're bringing in on an in-source basis, or any outsourced people you're having supporting you. And then I would say to agencies, think about what you offer. Don't cling on to these old models and services and say, that's what we sell, that's what we're always going to sell. There is space to offer great value by bringing insight and being responsive and being specialist, and use those specialist skills. And of course, bring that all important outside in perspective. So for me, I just think it's a really exciting time. It's all about progression of B2B. It's about progression of the relationships we have, and it's progression in a good way. So I think we just have to embrace it.
Strategic marketer and partner at the Magnus Club, Alex Brayshaw. Thanks very much. There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by the head of marketing at Media Hawk, Faye Thomason, to celebrate it. Faye, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much for inviting me here today.
Not at all. So, first of all, tell us a bit about Media Hawk.
Yeah, sure. So, Media Hawk are a marketing analytics and attribution solution. So, really, we can tell you where leads come from when they're visiting a website or calling your company. So essentially, our software is expert attributing all leads, all sale conversions, so especially calls. So So for example, if someone has landed on your website and then picked up the phone, essentially we can attribute to that source of the call from first click to last click attribution on there. And it can provide a ton of marketing analytics and caller data as well, including the recording of the phone call. So it's pretty clever stuff, really.
Okay, so that means you've probably got a scientific answer to my next question about great business marketing and communications. What's caught your eye?
Actually, not really on the
analytics. Okay. No. All right, what's caught your eye nonetheless?
Yeah, well, actually, HubSpot actually has caught my eye recently.
Okay.
They're a marketing and sales solution. They're specializing in CRM. But when I look for inspiration or examples of best practice in marketing, they are always popping up. I don't know if you're finding that the same. But I think their SEO and their content marketing approach is really fantastic. They're doing a great job.
And are there specific things that, have caught your eye? What are the things that are kind of impressing you about what they're doing and grabbing your attention?
Yeah, absolutely. I think kind of they seem to be answering every marketer's question, which really helps with the long tail in terms of what they're trying to do. They have a lot of listicles, which we know makes content really easy to digest as well. There's always a template that you can download, and from that, they're gathering data. So it's an excellent tool to gather that data, and they have related content as well, specifically on that subject, that really makes people sticky on that site. And I think they've kind of really tapped into content marketing as a core brand awareness and acquisition route for them. So, and I think they're doing that well on social media as well. So they're sharing that content across the channels, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and using the strengths of those channels. So you can really see, I think a lot of times I see kind of on those channels, you're just blasting the same message across all the different channels, but they're not doing that with HubSpot. I think kind of what I'm impressed with is, so like on Instagram, it's community posts, it's videos, it's highly engaging images. Whereas on LinkedIn, it's more that business focused content. You have polls on there, they have analysis. So I think they really play the social media part well and making use of all that great content marketing that they have available to them. And what I like about it is it kind of aligns to their mission statement. So their mission statement is about uniting software, education and community together to help grow their business. And I think that's really tangible in terms of what they're doing, and what you're seeing is you can see that education piece, you can see that community piece through their social media. So yeah, they seem to have tapped into something really well.
And it's a great example. I wonder if you look at it and think about learnings. You know, I wonder what marketers can learn from the HubSpot approach and apply to their future work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that really, you know, as we all know, we've said for many years, content is king, isn't it? And I think kind of they've really shown that kind of every, as a marketer, if you're putting something in search, you know, they're there at every turn. And so it almost gives you kind of that feeling of it's a non-given. What are HubSpot saying about this on there? And I think then that draw to download something as well, to get that data through, to then start marketing through email, or even just understanding that user, and potentially, I don't know what they're doing, but they could potentially be doing a lot of really great retargeting on there as well that they could learn from. So I think what marketers can learn is not to be shy about their content, their existing content, repurpose and reuse content. Old content still has relevance and really can be refreshed. And I think the boom of user-generated content as well in videos can really give a fresh angle to evergreen content. And I do think kind of when it comes to B2B marketing, content is so important. Education is so important in order to attract those audiences and keep them sticky.
Great points. So take a bit of HubSpot magic and apply it to your marketing. Head of Marketing at MediaHawk, Faye Thomason, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's been great chatting to you today.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Kate Denham, Will Wright, Alex Brayshaw and Faye Thomason. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.